Is made possible by the University of Illinois College of Law, hosting a Debtor World interdisciplinary academic symposium on debt, focusing on the debt crisis on May 2nd and 3rd in cooperation with the American Bankruptcy Institute. More information is available at www.law.uiuc.edu. Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the Blazing Virtuosity of Academy for Alte Musik Berlin on April 10th. More information is at krannertcenter.com. WILL programs are supported by DEX. DEX is a complete, up-to-date source for information, in the book, on CD-ROM, or online at dexknows.com.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on listener-supported WILL Radio. Our spring membership campaign is underway and actually rapidly drawing to a close. I'm Celeste Quinn. Les Schulte joins me in the studio this afternoon.
Yeah, that's right, Celeste, it is. It comes to a rapid conclusion tomorrow, and our goal is $200,000, and we have a way to go. Just looking at, I think we're a little over $102,000
right.
On the tote board, and so that means we need to get the phones going right now. Susan Kundrat is coming up. We're going to be talking about health and nutrition and keeping your body healthy. Well, if you want to keep your public radio station healthy, what you need to do now is put a little food into the kitty here.
Yeah, a little vitamin supplement. Bulk us up here.
That's right. And think about I was just thinking about a dollar a week. You know, if you've never made a contribution to WILL before, think about making a dollar a week contribution. I can't even think of anything I want that costs less than a dollar anymore. If you want to go downtown and park for a couple of hours, that's going to cost you, $1.50,
mm-hmm.
I think. So if you use this station even just once a week, if maybe you just tune in for the Afternoon Magazine and the great interviews you hear here, make a dollar a week contribution to WILL. Become a friend of WILL right now. And it's easy to do. It takes just a few minutes of your time and just a dollar a week of your money. 217-244-9455, or you can go online to willpledge.org. Do it this afternoon.
And we accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. And as Les mentioned, we're at $102,000 and change.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal, $200,000, so you don't have to be a math whiz to figure out we've got a ways to go.
Yeah, even I figured that one out. And
yeah.
I tell you, I'm way off on my numbers most of the time.
So it's really important that we hear from
people.
Really
is. Yeah.
Do it now. Help us out by calling in your pledge to 217-244-9455 or logging on to willpledge.org. Thanks, Les.
Thank you, Celeste.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn, and registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is indeed with us this afternoon. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions about diet, nutrition, give us a call and talk to Susan. The numbers, if you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number to call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free line, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and she's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. Again, questions about diet and nutrition are invited. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you on this beautiful day.
Oh, it is lovely out there. And didn't we have a beautiful weekend as well?
Oh, we did. It was really great. It makes me think of how much we need to think about hydration when you get that sun coming out like that.
Yeah, well, at our house, we worked up a bit of a thirst this weekend.
Did
out
you?
In the yard,
yes.
Raking up, cleaning out the flower beds and that kind of thing. So if you're thirsty, take a break.
That's right. It was nice to see so many people outside in their yards this weekend.
Yeah, lots of joggers and walkers and everybody headed to the park. Well, we've got a call.
Okay.
A caller, a listener calling in, waiting to talk with us already. So let's go and talk with this person in Mattoon on line four. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about an herbal remedy called Feverfew that I take for headaches.
Mm-hmm.
I take it daily, and it is very effective in keeping migraines at bay.
Yes.
And but I have read that you should not combine that with fish oil capsules because of the effect of that fish oil apparently has on blood clotting.
Right.
And the Feverfew, of course, is an anticoagulant, I guess. Is that true? But do you know anything about that?
Well, yeah, it brings up a good point. Many herbs have properties that are would be anticoagulants or blood thinners, per se.
Yes.
And so it's real important, and this makes it even more important that if you're taking an herb, you need to make sure that, first of all, your physician knows you're taking it and how much you're taking, those kinds of things, because it may or may not be a problem for you. But the reason we say be careful if you're combining with fish oil or garlic or anything else, because they all can combine to become, you know, much stronger blood thinner in your body. So you do want to make sure that that it doesn't become a problem. I've certainly seen, I've had clients actually who have developed major problems, even major bruising that they've seen, and it turns out they're taking three or four or five different herbs or supplements that are all blood thinners and have developed some other problems. So it just it reinforces the fact that you want to treat the herb. It sounds like you're doing that. Treat the herb just like any other medication, because the other thing is, of course, they can interact with other medications that might also be blood thinners too, and so we can run into some issues there. But that's certainly the reasoning.
Maybe the fish oil isn't such a good idea, as long as I take the Feverfew daily, and I do.
Well, what you may want to do is go into your physician and find out, you know, the levels and the amounts that you're taking. And, of course, they can also do the blood test to be able to tell how your blood, you know, how thin your blood is right now. And, you know, for some people, they can take smaller amounts of fish oil and still be on Feverfew. And it just really depends clinically on your own case. So that's what I would recommend, is if there's a good reason for taking different things, go in, talk with your physician about, make sure you bring in what you're taking, how much very specifically, and how often, and then you can kind of get a plan that would work for you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Other questions about diet and nutrition are invited this Monday afternoon. Give us a call. Join the conversation with Susan Kundrat, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Anything in particular you'd like to talk about here at the start as we wait for other folks to join us?
Well, I have a couple things that I brought along. And first, could I say a few things about the pledge drive?
Sure.
Well, I always think when the pledge drive comes up, a couple things come to mind that maybe people don't realize if they've lived here a long time. It seems to me, friends of mine who come in and out of town, out of Champaign-Urbana, those who come here are always amazed. Many of them are always amazed by what we offer here with public radio and public TV and having two radio stations and everything that WILL offers. That's so amazing. But even more so, friends of mine who've left the community often say, gosh, I miss WILL. And so when they leave, many people will say that they were so glad that, that you know, we're here and so glad that they had the opportunity to support WILL. So and I think as much, seems like I've been traveling all over the country this year for whatever reason, a lot more, and I'm always trying to find the local public radio stations. And just to have so much local programming coming from here, too, is amazing. So I think that's another thing for people to think about, that we sometimes take advantage of, we don't take advantage of what we have in the community, or we certainly don't realize just how wonderful it is when we have access to it until you're gone, or until maybe someone comes in from somewhere else and is amazed at what WIL offers. So I think it's a great opportunity for people to stop and think, gosh, you know, we really do have an amazing thing here, and just that we do need support. I mean, just like anything else, it takes people supporting it and being able to help us out. So I know that I appreciate being able to be on the radio, and having the local programming here is a lot of fun, too. So I think it's a good thing for people to stop and think about.
Well, thank you very much for that. That was totally unsolicited.
Yes, it was.
And I think it really is important that if you have something that you value, that you rely on, that you turn to, you don't take it for granted.
Right, right.
So, okay, thanks to Susan now, I'm going to give you another telephone
okay.
number. And that number is the number to call and make a pledge of financial support. That number is 244-9455, the area code 217-244-9455. If you'd like to talk to Susan this afternoon, 333-9455, the number to call in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phones now and take a call from a listener on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. I wonder if you could talk about reducing your triglyceride levels with diet or anything else.
Sure.
And I'll just hang up if you don't need to ask me anything.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And reducing triglycerides. Triglycerides, you know, that's one way that fat is actually carried in the blood. We think of it as triglycerides. If you kind of thought about it in your head and you thought that it has three fatty acids, that's why it's tri or three fats and more of a carbohydrate backbone. So I think of it as sort of a carbohydrate and three fats coming out the side. The things that we find people do to decrease cholesterol in general sometimes actually raise triglycerides. So it's good to talk about this because often if we cut down on fat or saturated fat and try to eat more whole grains and fruits and vegetables, that will often bump up carbohydrate in the diet, which is very good usually to help decrease total cholesterol. But triglycerides sometimes will go up when you get more carbohydrate in the diet. So what we find for triglycerides being high is often we kind of monitor and sometimes bring down total carbohydrate. It may be that you look and see where, for example, you have more regular sugar in your diet. If you're eating sweets or drinking soda or anything that's just regular sugar that isn't real highly nutritious carbohydrate, we would want to get those down, you know, kind of take that out of the diet or really lower that. That brings down carbohydrate. We often find, too, that increasing more good fats in the diet may help with triglycerides as well. So that might be a place where you'd say, well, gosh, instead of having a huge bagel in the morning, maybe I'll have a half a bagel with peanut butter on it. So you increase more monounsaturated fat, but you're decreasing the carbs at the same time. And that could be helpful. The other thing, from a supplemental standpoint, we do look pretty closely if triglycerides are high at possibly adding omega-3 fatty acids or the fish oils, because there are a lot of studies to indicate that increasing fish oil in the diet, typically you have to get from supplemental forms to get enough, can in some cases decrease triglycerides as well. And so we look at those things. There's some indication that maybe making sure the fibers you do or the carbohydrates you do take in are more soluble fiber, more of this gummy fiber like beans and peas and oatmeal, fruits and vegetables in general, and that may be helpful as well. And then from a standpoint of weight, many people will see triglycerides go down even with a 5% reduction in their body weight. And really that's what we're kind of shooting for now. When people do need to lose weight, we really look first to try to drop about 5%. So let's say if someone needs to, maybe they're 200 pounds and they should be 160, well, you know, the first thing we do is try to drop about 10 pounds off of that and then kind of reevaluate and gradually go down. But for many people, 10, 15, 20 pounds weight loss will drop triglycerides as well. And like with anything else, of course, you want to look at exercise because exercise has generally a tremendous effect on lipids and can really help bring down triglycerides as well. So I think we would look at all those things, but keeping in mind that just going on a low-fat diet may not be the thing to drop triglycerides. We actually want the fat. We want more nuts and seeds and oils and fatty fish and maybe fatty acid supplements that are omega-3s. And then definitely kind of monitoring carbohydrate, maybe dropping some calories down, particularly from simple sugars.
Okay, very good. Next we go to a listener in Mahomet, line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a quick question, and then I'll get off and listen to whatever it may have. I've been reading quite a bit about royal jelly lately. We've been a family of five. We've had a spate of illnesses over the winter. We've gotten all those flu bugs that have lasted forever. And I'd seen that royal jelly may have something to do with immunosuppression or boosting the immune system. And the secondary part of that question is I'd done just a tiny bit of research online, and boy, there are a real variety of forms and costs associated with royal jelly. So if you have any suggestions about taking it and or in what form, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, royal jelly certainly has been around for a while as far as maybe enhancing immunity and maybe having the antibacterial properties that we also think of with garlic. And so that would typically be, you know, some of the things that we've looked at. The question really with royal jelly, it seems to be with the research is thin. In other words, are there not a lot of good studies that are peer-controlled studies or peer-reviewed controlled studies that would indicate that it really does work? Doesn't mean it doesn't work, but there probably aren't a lot of studies. So that, I guess, is something to think about to begin with. I have one of my reviews here on dietary supplements, and the bottom line is there, you know, we don't know for sure if it has a lot of interaction with other things. We don't know for sure if the trials have been conducted in such a way that we can really tell if it's beneficial. But on the other hand, it does appear that certain properties might be, like we talked about, maybe antibacterial. So maybe that is beneficial with decreasing illness and sickness. It's very possible that might be beneficial. Dosage information may be in the type, like you're talking about, and I'll just kind of read what I have here, that it's often combined with ginseng, raw honey, bee pollen, B vitamins, usually in a capsule or tablet, but sometimes you get it in other forms too. And usually that's 30 to 150 milligrams of royal jelly. That's typical of what you'd find. Now, I think kind of moving on to which form is best, probably mm-hmm. we don't know exactly, because we still need to make sure we're getting enough research on the actual components as well. And so I think it's certainly something that, you know, we can keep looking at. There, one thing I will say with royal jelly, bee pollen, sometimes I'll have clients who take bee pollen and have some allergic reactions to it too. Same thing with royal jelly. So you have to be careful. There have been people who've had asthma attacks taking these types of supplements, and it's been problematic. So you probably know if you've used it, if it doesn't bother you, then you're not one of those people. But that's, you know, a potential problem. So I guess I would say it's one of those supplements that shows promise, but we probably need more research to really indicate exactly how much would be appropriate and what form would be appropriate as well. So
okay. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line 3. Good afternoon.
Hi, I have questions for my weightlifting sons. They do take creatine sometimes. They're wondering if it's a good idea to take it all the time or cycle on and off. That's the first one.
Okay.
Second one is, you know, you go to buy these things and they give you hard sell on lots of different things, but they're wondering about something called ZMA, a lifting supplement, if you've ever heard of it, if it's safe, side effects. And also in terms of consuming carbs, if they're going to go to the gym in the early evening or run in the early evening, when is the best time of day to do that?
Okay, good. Good questions. Let me answer first by probably the key things they should be doing if they're weightlifting. If they're strength training and trying to increase muscle mass, there are a couple things that we want to make sure they're doing.
Okay.
One is just simply the best way to increase muscle mass is to make sure that they're eating throughout the day and they're getting more calories than they're burning. So that's kind of a basic thing, which is not always easy to figure out. But I would say if they're trying to get stronger, then they just want to make sure, if nothing else, they start eating a little more, because a lot of it's based on calories that you have available in your body, and also with protein. So may I ask what their ages are?
Let's see, 20 and 23, sorry.
Okay, yeah, 20 and 23. So at that age, too, if they're really trying to gain lean muscle mass, they could probably take in a gram of protein for every pound they weigh.
Okay.
So they need enough calories, then they need enough protein. A lot of research has indicated now that spreading the protein out throughout the day is really more beneficial too. So in other words, if they're having just a bowl of cereal for breakfast and a little light lunch, I would have them eat a lot more calories early in the day, including protein along with carbohydrates. So that's spread out. So we know that that's beneficial. Before a workout, you know, an hour or two before a workout, they should have both protein and carbohydrate. And so it might be something as simple as saying, you know, they're going to have a turkey sandwich and a banana or something 2 hours before. That's fine, because turkey has a lot of essential amino acids. If they add milk or yogurt or something like that, that's good too.
Okay.
So that they just want to, you know, pre-energize their muscles a couple hours before they train. And then within 30 minutes, they should try to get in a good mix of carbohydrate and protein once again. It might be something simple like a Carnation Instant Breakfast drink that they can take with them and drink right after, or something like a Clif Bar, you know, some kind of quick energy bar that they can take in with some extra water. Those things would be kind of non-negotiables, if you ask me. Like, you absolutely should be doing those if you're trying to gain weight. Now, I would think of creatine as sort of an additional thing. If all those things are in place and they need extra creatine in the diet, or if they're not getting enough in the diet, then they may benefit from 3 to 5 grams a day is a typical dose for a day. We used to think you had to spend time, you know, loading the body with extra creatine and then dropping it down. And now we know that that's not necessarily any more beneficial than just having the daily dose with a carbohydrate source. It's often taken with juice or something like that. And there, you know, it may be beneficial to go on and off just because we don't have a lot of studies to show that people on creatine, let's say for 5 years running, that there are no problems with that. We don't think there are problems with creatine for most people because we have a lot of research on it. But it certainly doesn't hurt maybe if they're not in a phase where they're training, not, you know, they're not really training as much strength-wise for a while. Mm-hmm. They could go off it for a while and then maybe go back on when they're doing heavy training.
Okay.
So that's, I feel like that's maybe a little safer way to take it.
Okay.
The supplement ZMA, there's a lot less research on that. And I wouldn't probably, I'd probably spend that ZMA money on more quality protein sources.
Okay.
So, for example, you know, actually you'd think creatine may definitely be beneficial. It seems like people are either responders or non-responders. One of the reasons I ask their ages is because most studies are on 18 and over.
Okay.
We have very little data on younger athletes, and the safety data is very questionable the younger someone gets. So, but at that age, safety data is probably fine. They'd want to make sure they're hydrating well if they take creatine because it does affect hydration status some. They're stretching really well, even though no studies have really shown without a doubt that athletes have more pulls and strains on creatine. I will say that the athletic trainers I work with in many cases see more pulls and strains, and I have too, if someone's on it. So whenever we have an athlete pull up with a hamstring, and a lot of football teams I work with, then, you know, that's the first question we ask is, are they taking creatine?
Really?
Yeah. So they're, you know, but again, that's been studied, hasn't really been found to play out, but that would be something I'd look for. The other thing just to bring in is that depending on how they're eating, you know, there's about a gram of creatine in 8 ounces of lean meat. So 8 ounces of lean beef or pork or any red meat, really, or fish. So any kind of fish is real high in creatine. Chicken and turkey are not high in creatine. So if your sons are big chicken and turkey eaters, I would also suggest that maybe they drop creatine in a supplemental form down a little, and they make sure they get at least 8 ounces of lean, again, just lean sirloin or lean pork loin or something like that, and not always have chicken or turkey. Sometimes athletes go too heavy on those meats, and then they miss out on natural creatine sources.
Okay.
And that can be helpful as well.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's very helpful.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener in Danville, line one. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Hi there.
Okay. I just wondered if there was any natural type supplements that would be good for anxiety, panic disorder, and or depression. I've tried all the SSRIs and some lorazepam and a lot of things, none of which have helped at all. In fact, they have been detrimental.
Okay, this is kind of a food and mood question.
Yeah. Well, there certainly are some things that may be helpful. And I would, in this case, like the first caller, I would make sure that you're trying maybe these other supplements or herbals with your physician, just like you would any other medication. I think whenever you're looking at, you know, a medical concern and trying to remedy it naturally, if possible, then you want to be monitored with that. A good example of one herb that, you know, does work for some people and is helpful is St. John's wort.
I've tried that one.
Yeah, if you've tried that one, because we do have some studies on that one, but it doesn't work for everyone either. The other thing that's being looked at a lot right now, and we've mentioned it already today, is omega-3 fatty acids. So looking at fish oils and how fish oil does seem to have an effect in the brain and maybe helps with inflammation and other things too. So that's being looked at quite closely now with depression.
What would be the dosage on that? Because I am taking that.
You are taking that, yes.
Yeah, but I don't know what, you know, whether I would be taking enough.
Sure. I mean, the typical dose to start with is 1 to 3 grams a day.
Uh-huh.
And but that would be something that in larger amounts some people take under the supervision of their physician. So
right.
you may check that with your physician to see if are you taking enough, depending upon other things you might be taking and if it affects, again, it is a blood thinner, so it could affect other things. But that would be something to look at. And certainly from a diet standpoint, if you're not already trying to kind of eat throughout the day, get good energy, mix protein with carbohydrate where you might have a little longer lasting energy in what you eat, that can be very helpful too, because if we're more energized in our body physically, often we feel better too. So I would look closely at that. Sometimes when you don't feel well, we don't necessarily eat very well either as a side effect. But maybe trying to really prioritize getting your meals in and get some snacks during the day may help you have more energy. So that's something to look at as well.
And one quick question, too. I just recently have read two places where for calcium to work within the body, there also has to be magnesium. I have not read that before. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of calcium supplements will have magnesium with them, too. And many foods that are high in calcium also have magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is something that I think is you hear that more, you see more about that, too. So now a lot of the preparations that you'll find have magnesium as well as vitamin D, sometimes also have vitamin K, because that helps with bone formation as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, Susan Kundrat. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. So if you have questions about diet, nutrition, you can give us a call and talk to Susan and she'll help you out. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. And now, dear listeners, we're asking you to help us out. Martha Deal has joined us in the studio. She and Harriet Williamson produce the Afternoon Magazine and Focus 580, and we couldn't do it without them, and we can't do this radio station. We can't do WILL radio without listeners. So it is really imperative that we hear from folks today as we are drawing near the end of our spring membership campaign.
Well, Celeste, it's always fun to come and ask for money with you. And I want to remind listeners what a great service Celeste's program is, especially when she has someone like Susan on. One of the things that WILL does is it keeps you in touch with the world of politics, economics, the arts, and today, nutrition. And it does it in a way very, very personally. How many other places in this community can you call up and ask and then have other people respond to your question and say, oh, I've tried such and such, in addition to the expert that we have on the air? So AM 580 does keep you in touch with the world of politics, economics, and this afternoon, nutrition. We accompany you to work in the morning, back home again each night. We fill you in on the news. You need to make decisions in your life. And at this moment, back to my theme of nutrition. And we depend on you so much. We depend on you for continuing support. Call 217-249-455 with your renewal or willpledge.org.
244-9455. It only takes a minute or two. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. And again, that phone number, 244-9455. And the web address, willpledge.org. And thanks this afternoon to Martha Deal for joining us. And our thanks as well to Susan Kundrat. She's here. If you'd like to talk with Susan, the number to call, 333-9455, 333-WILL. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 222-WILL. We had a listener call in and leave Jason Croft, our technical director, with a question. The caller is interested in information about teenage acne and diet. And,
well,
What's the latest on that?
Well, I think a couple things we think about with skin in general. I mean, I don't know that there's anything per se that someone really shouldn't eat or should eat a lot of, because we know that mainly it's hormonal and the body's going through that process. But I would say, you know, a couple things that we know help nutritionally and help the skin in general are real. Can be important things to think about, particularly for teenagers who often are very dehydrated. So if you think about fluids are really important in the body as a whole, but they're also very important to nourish the skin, and staying hydrated really helps the skin. I mean, anybody will tell you that if you go to the makeup counter, that you also need to stay hydrated. And so just from a standpoint of blood flow and carrying nutrients to the skin, I think that's really helpful. to make sure you're hydrated. And, of course, we wake up dehydrated, so it's real important, I think, for teenagers especially who may not drink much during the day, to start out in the morning. What I would do is I would keep a water bottle, a full water bottle, right by the bed. And so as soon as you get up, you grab the water bottle, you start drinking. You maybe drink on the way to the bathroom, to the shower. You at least drink a 16 or 20-ounce water bottle by the time you leave for school. And that would be one thing that would be very simple to do, get used to, and maybe help as far as thinking about staying hydrated. I think most people, when they start drinking in the morning, then they tend to drink more during the day too, because they've sort of started the day out that way. So that would be one thing I'd look at. And then I think nutritionally, just to really, you know, we know that probably having a balanced diet has a good effect on skin as well. So trying to eat fruits and vegetables and drinking foods high in vitamin C, like orange juice and things that teenagers need anyway, would be a smart move with that. You know, there's some thought that, yes, if you eat a lot of greasy foods, will that affect your skin and make it more greasy? Well, maybe. I don't know that it necessarily does, but it would certainly point to the idea of trying to not eat as many fried foods and trying to get more foods that are a little bit healthier. And with fast food, too, of course, teenagers may eat a lot of fast food, and thinking about things like subs and grilled chicken sandwiches and still remembering to get salads and yogurt parfaits and juice and apple slices and all the other things you can get fast food now, just as a way of trying to balance the diet a little bit better. You know, if we have more nutrients on board in our body, it's easier to heal. It's easier for our body processes to work, and it's easier for our skin to be healthier as well as everything else. So I think I'd focus on kind of those basic things and hydration.
Yeah, okay. And it reminds me that maybe it's about time we had a dermatologist on the afternoon magazine, too, to take these kinds of questions. And I know also we're coming into that time of year when we're going to be out in the sun more, and that kind of topical kind of thing to talk about. So I will put that on my to-do list, and I want to thank the caller for his or her question this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk with Susan Kundrat. And we also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. One of the things I wanted to talk with you just a little bit about, it seems to me that there's been a lot of talk, a lot of interest in vitamin D recently. And I happened to be in the supermarket and I thought, you know, I've been hearing this, vitamin D, vitamin D, vitamin D. I rolled over into the part of the supermarket where you buy supplements.
Yes.
And the vitamin D aisles, the shelves were bare. So there's something going on, I think.
Right.
I mean, that's just anecdotal, but what's happening?
There's a lot going on with vitamin D. Well, first of all, you know, the recommendations are increasing. And so the amount of vitamin D that's being recommended now for a day is 1,000 IUs of vitamin D. So from 400 to 1,000.
Okay.
So that's one big thing. And a couple studies, and it's very timely that you mentioned vitamin D, because I brought a couple things that have come out just in the last month or so, reviews that have been written up and recent studies. One of them is on vitamin D in falls, and this was a review looking at people age 7, or this was 300 women age 70 to 90 who had low blood levels of vitamin D. And we've talked before on the show how that might be something to get checked, because particularly living here, of course, today it feels like a great vitamin D day, but without all the sun most of the time, we don't see it. But in this study, these women were actually supplemented. If they got the supplement, it was 1,000 milligrams of calcium, plus they got 1,000 IUs of vitamin D. And those who had the vitamin D had a much lower risk of falling and of fracture. So we know that if someone does fall, if their bones are strong enough, maybe they have lowered risk of actually breaking a bone. And that was the case in this study. So we know for bone strength, it's really important. Another study that just came out looking at vitamin D and the heart said that, gosh, maybe those with high blood pressure, if they had low levels of vitamin D, they may have more trouble with angina, heart attack, those kinds of things. And even though vitamin D wasn't linked to heart disease in people in this study, they think there might be some benefit to the heart of having enough vitamin D. So in this case, they thought, gosh, let's, you know, maybe supplement with 1,000 IUs if you have high blood pressure. So that may be important. And other things that vitamin D has been linked to, boosting muscle strength in elderly, improving balance. And of course, it all makes sense. If your bones are a little stronger, then you're able to do those things. Decreasing risk of osteoporosis, of course, maybe even preventing certain cancers. Some studies have linked good vitamin D stores to lower risk of diabetes and other illnesses. So I think it's really one of those vitamins that's now just getting such a close look in so many areas. And also just living here, we're just not as apt to have high levels. In some of the athletes I work with in particular, those who play inside, you know, a good example might be basketball or volleyball players who play inside, who train inside, who, you know, they're going to be much higher risk probably too, because they're just not being out in the sun, getting that kind of exposure for the body to be able to make vitamin D from the sun. And so that's really why we're saying, and this is another good, very good reason to bring on a dermatologist, is because it's very confusing for people now when they hear, don't go out unless you put on all this sunscreen.
Right.
And that's why there's some recommendations to, well, get, you know, your 5, 10, 15 minutes without sunscreen.
And then
put it on.
Yeah.
So it would be really good to clarify all that, because that is a big concern. But now our general recommendations for people to know really is 1,000 IUs a day of vitamin D, which many supplements now in terms of multis are going up in amounts too. And of course, we do typically have vitamin D in calcium supplements and in other foods. But it's something that I think we're realizing we've been too low with.
Let's take another call now. A listener south of Champaign on a cell phone. Line one, hi.
Yes. I was wondering if you get enough of the good fatty oil like fish oil from nuts and flax. Would that be as good as the fish oil?
Okay. The actual fatty acids that you get, the fatty acid composition of flax, and which is an excellent source, flax seeds themselves, particularly if they're ground, or flax oil, is a little bit different than fish oil, but it's close. It's a very good source of these fatty acids, of certain fatty acids that are found in fish. And so that's a possibility, let's say, to get nuts and seeds and flax. Even if you eat fish, though, I will say, if you need extra fatty acids or need extra omega-3s for some medical concern or to prevent something, it's really difficult to get it even if you eat a lot of fish. And so I would say then your question about nuts and seeds and flax, if you're just trying to enhance health, maintain good fatty acid profile in your body, but you don't really necessarily need to worry about preventing a problem or decreasing inflammation for one reason or another, or lowering triglycerides, you can get it in the diet without even having fish, like you're saying, flax, nuts, and seeds. But if someone is thinking about preventing, you know, a disease, or they've got a high risk for disease, or they're looking at using it, fish oil, more for another reason, then probably you'd have to supplement, because a gram of fish oil is kind of a lot. It's not a lot when you take it in a pill, but and then kind of on the other hand, if you do eat fish, if you eat fatty fish like sardines and salmon and tuna, having that twice a week, a good 3 or 4 ounces twice a week is recommended by the American Heart Association just for general overall health, even if you don't have high triglycerides, just for cardiac health.
Okay. Next we talk with a listener in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Hello. My question is regarding vitamin B deficiency, and I'm looking to find out what are the causes and effects of that and what one could possibly do to increase the vitamin B intake. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, because there are so many different B vitamins, there are a lot of different deficiencies related to different B vitamins. So I guess I would say if someone has a vitamin B deficiency, then they'd want to find out exactly what they're dealing with, you know, which B vitamin is low, and is it a B12? For example, B12 deficiency is not that uncommon at age 50 and over, because we don't absorb vitamin B12 from food very well as we get older. And so B12 should be in a supplement. You should take that in a multivitamin or a supplement, or you could risk having low B12 stores, which could affect a lot of different things in the body. So I guess that'd be my number one question, is find out which B vitamin is low or may be deficient in. B vitamins are found in a lot of different foods. So the answer is maybe what would you eat? If you eat a lot of different whole grains, if you eat a lot of beans and seeds and peas and really just a variety of foods, generally you're going to get B vitamins. Even things you look on the side of a cereal box, and generally it's fortified with B vitamins. There's even some concern now. Another really hot vitamin that's in the news now is folic acid, because folic acid has been added to many foods because we know it can help prevent birth defects if women get enough folic acid when they're pregnant and before they're pregnant. And now there's some concern that too much folic acid might be linked to certain cancers. And so people may be getting way too much of certain B vitamins and actually having too much. And so I guess I would find out what the particular concern is, if there's a certain B vitamin. And then typically if it's low, then you supplement with larger amounts of that, much larger than what would be in a typical B vitamin supplement, because it may be that if stores are very low, you really need high amounts for a while. And then you need to follow that clinically with your physician, make sure your blood levels get to where they need to be.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Oak Forest, line 4. Hi.
Hi. My husband and I have been taking the fish oil supplements, and I have been purchasing one that's produced in Sweden and is verified one of the purest ones out. And we've been taking 1,000 milligrams. I was wondering how often you should take that. Should you be taking it every day, or would that be too much?
Well, the fish oil at 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram is really in the recommended dosage for daily dosage, because typically it's 1 to 3 grams. And so what I would suggest with that, 1 gram is not a huge amount, but again, maybe combined with other things you might be taking or your diet or whatnot, it probably would be good just to check and make sure that for you in particular, your blood is fine in terms of not too thin, since it is a blood thinner, again, as we've mentioned. But 1 gram would not be excessive. It would not be, you know, from what we know from what's helpful, it'd be at the low end of what's helpful, but it wouldn't be a real high amount. So just from hearing that, it wouldn't be a concern to me. But since everybody's different, you know, it would be good to say, gosh, you know, check with your doc. Maybe there's absolutely no concern at all based on your health history that it could be any problem. But that's what I would check. But a daily dose of that is not excessive.
Okay. And you said it does act as a blood thinner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does act as a blood thinner, particularly in larger amounts.
Okay. So 1 gram wouldn't be considered a really...
No, I mean, that's not considered a real high amount, but... again, it really depends on how you're eating. If you're eating a lot of foods, that might also affect that. Or if you're taking other things that could thin the blood as well, then it might have more of effect on that too. Because it's really cumulative in terms of everything that you're taking in and eating and supplementing with and those kinds of things. But that certainly is within the recommended dose.
I've been talking about things being supplemented. I'm very careful about what I buy that has supplements in it, because now there's a organic milk out that's supplemented with the fish oil or omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't buy that one because I figured I already know what I'm getting if I take the pill, but I don't know how much I'm getting in the milk. It doesn't say, and also I drink different amounts.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, that's being a really smart consumer, because you want to know kind of what your body's taking in consistently, and it brings up a good point that sometimes when you're taking a lot of things that are supplemented, a lot of foods that are supplemented with all kinds of things, it's really difficult to know how much you're getting. I've even had athletes who are end up getting real stomach problems because they're taking too much vitamin C, which is really kind of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at all the vitamin C they're getting from all these other sources, it ends up being a problem.
Could I ask you what other vitamins act as a blood thinner?
Well, there aren't too many vitamins that actually do, but it would be more things like garlic and a lot of herbs act as blood thinner, and of course a lot of medications. So, but in terms of actual other vitamins, I'm trying to think if anything comes to mind, not necessarily that you would take in large enough amounts, but certainly herbs, it's a real concern with different herbals.
So you really want to keep your doctor up to date and... So that is good advice indeed, and we're coming to the point here where we're going to have to wrap things up, and we want to say thank you very much to Susan, and maybe you can just hang with us here for another minute or two.
Thank you.
Martha Deal is back in the studio with us, and we're here to encourage people.
And thank people who have called in during our fund drive, and to remind them what great local programming we have. Great ideas started small, and
Susan's got her own business is one idea of that, but WILL and public radio started small. And here we are today, and we keep going when people like you out there call in with that pledge. 244-9455.
244-WILL. We would really love to hear from you on that line this afternoon. We are rapidly drawing down to the close of our spring membership campaign. And our goal for this drive, $200,000. We're a little over $102,000. So it's really important that we hear from folks today. 333-9455. That's the number you call to talk with Susan. But today, now, Susan is here with us, and we're drawing that program down to a close here. So we want to hear from people at 244-9455. Join us with a pledge of financial support. We hope to hear from you. A basic membership, $40. Maybe you can join us at $1 a week, $52. Or maybe you're an individual who could join us at $1,000. Whatever you can do. We would love to hear from you. We do it, as Martha mentioned, you know, step by step, day by day, one new member at a time. So now's the time to join us. 244-9455. Don't put it off. The area code 217. That's 217-244-WILL. We also have a web address, a secure place that you can pledge online, and that's willpledge.org. Again, Susan, thank you so much, and thank you so much for your words of encouragement about our drive this spring.
Thank you so much for being here. It's a wonderful thing.
This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our thanks to Susan Kundrat. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. So we're hoping we'll see her early in May. And Susan is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips, and you can find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. 1:53 Central Time. Settlement prices should be in now from Chicago and Kansas City. Todd Gleason has the numbers today. Todd?
Well, they're in from Chicago, but not all of them. The CME Group settlement prices for the livestock, not yet available. We'll give you some range. I'll take care of those if they happen to come in, Celeste. So we'll go all the way through the numbers, but as we do that, you might want to think about dialing this number, 217-244-9455. Pledge your financial support to this radio station. For programs like the Afternoon Magazine with Susan Kundrat and Celeste Quinn that you just heard, and for the agricultural programming that you listen to with Dave Dickey and myself, it's 217-244-9455. If you're at your computer, you can skip going through the phone lines and hit willpledge.org. The important part is that we all get together and we drive forward with this one. Your pledge of $40, $50, $75, $100, $200, $1,000, they all make a difference right here at this radio station. Here's the way the numbers in Chicago settled on this. Monday afternoon, May contract in the wheat pit, 53 cents lower. 980 and a half was the high, the low at 914 and a quarter. Settlement price down 53 at 921 and a quarter. July futures at 993 top, bottom at 35, settled at 34 and one half, down 57. And September futures in the wheat pit, $10 two and a quarter cents the high. The low at $9.48, settlement price at 947 and a half, down 55 and a half. December contract at 1015 and a quarter top, 962. And a settlement at 960, down 52 and a half. From the corn pit nearby, May contract, 8 cents lower, $6 and a penny, the top for the day, the low at $5.87. Settlement price at $5.90, down 8 cents. July futures, 614, the high, the low at $6 and a quarter. Settled 8 lower at 603 and a quarter. In September, 617, the high, the low at 602 and three quarters. September corn, 605 and a half, down 6 and a half. Your new crop, December, $6.14 and a half, the high, the low at $6. Settlement price, $6.03 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. And the March contract down 4 and a quarter cents, the high at $6.20 and a quarter, the low at $6.08. A settlement price at $6.11, down 4 and a quarter for the afternoon. Soy complex now, soybean futures for the afternoon, $12.95, the high, the low at $12.45, settled at $12.55, down 22. And July 13.12, the high. The low at 1262.5, a settlement price 1272.5, down 21.5 cents. August futures $13.75. The high, the low at 57.5, and a settlement price down 20 cents at $12.67. September beans 1279.25. The high, the low at $12.33.25. Settled 16 cents lower, $12.46 in November. Your new crop harvest month, $12.46.25. We haven't put them in the ground yet. They're still worth more than 12 bucks, $12.25. The low, the high, or rather the settlement price at $12.15. Those new crop beans down 8.75 for the day. January futures down 11 cents at $12.28. May bean meal futures 338.30. The high, the low at 325. A settlement price at 330 even. Down 350 in July at 341.10, high, low at 28.10, settlement price at 333.10, down 360 on the afternoon. And the May bean oil, 57.75, the high, the low at 55.78, settled at 55.97, down 64. July futures down 54. They had a high price today at 58.45, or rather 58.48. July bean oil, $56.51, the low, and a settlement price at $56.71. Down 54 cents, that for the July soybean oil futures. The Mercantile Exchange numbers have not settled, but we'll give you the closing ranges for the afternoon. In the nearby April live cattle, high price today at $88 and a nickel. The low at $87.40 and a last trade at $87.85. And their change for the day down a half cent, or rather down 5 cents. June futures, here the settlements come. Let's take a look and go back right through those. April live cattle, $88.05. The high, the low at $87.40. Settlement price now down 2.5 cents at $87.87.5. June futures, $89.67.5. The high, the low at $88.70. Settled at $89.50. They were 30 higher for the day in the August contract in the live cattle pit. Up 60 cents today, $95.45 the high, the low at $94.37.5, and a settlement price at $95.37.5. Up 60 October futures, 55 cents higher, $100.85 the high, the low at $99.87.5. October live cattle, $100.80, up 55. April feeders, $99.10 the high, the low at $97.90. And a settlement price at $99 even, up 40 for the day. May futures, $101.95 the high, the low at $100.